If you were asked to make a top 10 list entitled The Top 10 Ways in Which I Have Suffered, what would be on your list? Say something from your childhood? Maybe something from just a few years ago. Maybe something that is happening to you right now. Maybe your list would include situations that could fall under a general category, such as suffering because of loss, or suffering because of a betrayal, suffering because of failure, or because of uncertainty. Maybe suffering because of lack, or even suffering because of faith. It was probably this last one that most of the readers to whom the Apostle Peter was addressing his first letter. While some of these people might have been slandered and reviled and accused simply because of their faith in Jesus, some of them had probably acted foolishly, and they were suffering because of their own foolish acts. But this morning, as we continue our series, New Life in the Same Old Place, and we begin chapter 4, the title of today's message is Fighting Through Your Suffering. And we'll be looking at verses 1 and 6 to see how Peter is going to talk to his readers, not about the reality of their suffering, but about their response to it. Charles Swindoll once said, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond to it. In regard to the reality of their suffering, I believe that Peter's understanding is summed up well by the writer C.S. Lewis. And he wrote, we were promised suffering. They were part of the program. We were even told, blessed are they that mourn. In light of the reality of our sufferings, we need to hear Peter this morning. Peter has made it clear that he is not speaking to those who suffer as a result of their own sins. But if we suffer for other reasons, if we suffer because we are Christians, or at least suffer as Christians, we need to hear what God has for us this morning. So let's look together at 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. But what I want to do is actually start in chapter 3 and read verse 18. Now, verses 19 and 22 of chapter 3 are kind of a parenthesis. So what I'm going to do is read 18 and then jump to chapter 4, verse 1 and start reading there. And let's see how they go together. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit. Since, therefore, Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. Now let's go ahead and stop there. Notice the language that Peter is using in verse 1. Arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. Well, this is a military term that Peter is using here. So why is he using this kind of language? Peter says, arm yourselves. Because he knows that there is always a battle involved when we suffer. While our suffering might be related to the words or actions of another, the battle that Peter is talking about is not a battle that is taking place out here, but a battle that takes place in here. So in some sense, Peter is telling them that even though suffering is part of the program, they must nevertheless fight through their suffering. The response to suffering should be to fight. in the suffering that you are currently experiencing, in the suffering that is to come, are you ready to fight? Let's see if we can figure out from this passage what exactly this kind of battle looks like. The first question that we have to ask is, whose weapons or whose strategy are we using? Look again at some of the words in verse 1. Since, therefore, Christ suffered in the flesh. Since? What is he saying here? Peter is telling us that because Jesus, the Son of God, God in human flesh, suffered as we suffer, we have a perfect example to follow. He goes on and says, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. What perspective did Jesus, the perfect Son of God, have when he suffered? And more specifically, how did he respond to the suffering he experienced as a result of his perspective? Now remember what Peter told us back in chapter 2? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. Notice how Peter describes Jesus' response here. Out of the five responses mentioned, four of them are put in negative terms. He did not sin. He did not revile. Why does Peter express it like this? Because he knows how human beings typically respond to suffering. And he wants to show us that Jesus Christ is anything but typical. Kirsten, I'll let you off the hook right now. But go back to chapter 4, verse 1. Peter goes on to say, for whoever has suffered in the flesh like Jesus suffered in the flesh, that person has ceased from sin. You see, Peter is reminding them that the one who is willing to suffer for Christ and or suffer like Christ demonstrates that he or she has put away the old life and is committed to the new. That doing God's will is more important than comfort or safety. That God's desires are more important than my own desires. And Peter affirms this in verse 2 and describes in even clearer terms what our commitment to suffer, like Jesus, says about our commitment to God. And he says, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. In light of this, we have to ask, do our sufferings typically lead us to compromise according to human passions or to commitment according to God's will? Again, C.S. Lewis gives us a helpful way to express all of this. God, who foresaw your tribulation, has specifically armed you to go through it not without pain, but without stain. Peter is teaching us this morning, God is showing us this morning, that when we suffer, we need to fight to respond like Jesus. Now look at how Peter goes on to talk to his readers about the response to the persecution that they were experiencing. Starting at verse 3. The time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do. Living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery. and they malign you. But they will give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. It might appear at first that Peter is switching gears here, that he has dropped the subject of suffering. But do you see that the contrast in verse 2 is still here? The contrast between human passions or human desires and God's will or God's desires? In verse 3, Peter describes human passions as what the Gentiles want to do. Now remember when we first kind of started this, in this letter, the Gentiles refer to the non-Christians, the non-Christ followers, the people who do not follow the way. Also, the fact that Peter is still talking about suffering is evident from verse 4. These followers of Jesus were maligned because they do not go along with their non-Christian neighbors in the same flood of debauchery. Now, some of you may have some other versions. What is maligned? You know, I actually heard that used in a football game yesterday. Somebody was maligned. How can you use that in a football game? What does maligned mean? Any ideas? What do your versions say? Someone's quickly looking it up online. I have it. I just want to know. Versions, anything? Yeah. When somebody says something bad about you. Anyone else? Maligned is to make evil or harmful statements, either to defame or to slander. So you're right, Barb. Here's the next one. What is debauchery? It's not a term we use a whole lot today. We don't use it. It's kind of one of those that goes by. What does debauchery mean? Any idea? Someone's quickly. What? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That is correct, yeah. Were you saying something? Sin? Okay, yeah, sin. Debauchery is sin. The definition that one writer has says uncontrolled or unrestrained. Let's try this again. Uncontrolled, I can't even say it, or unrestrained indulgence in the seeking of pleasure. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Most of the behaviors mentioned in verse 3 were actually related to the worship of false gods. And as verse 3 confirms, many of these Christians used to live this way. But now, they are being harassed because they no longer go to the drinking parties and the pagan temples. Have you ever been in a situation like that? I remember back when I was in high school and first became a Christian, I would go to, at lunchtime, we would go to a Bible study. And sometimes when we were walking there, people would tease us and, you know, call us Jesus freaks or Bible thumpers and things like that. When I got into college, actually, I was in college for a long, long time, but toward the later of college years, okay, when Lisa and I were married and I was on the basketball team, we would actually travel around and went to the Philippines. And some of the guys would like to go out and party. And at first, they gave me a little bit of a hard time because I didn't go out and party with them. But they eventually grew to accept it, and when they would go out and party, they would leave me alone, and then they would come back, and everything was kind of cool. But I'm sure that the verbal abuse that Peter's audience suffered was far worse than that. And some of you may even have stories of your own that are far worse than mine. But do you see that Peter is talking about these things because he knows that they were being tempted to respond to their sufferings with compromise? Instead of fighting to respond like Jesus, they were being tempted to give up and to give in, to go back to their old lifestyle, to live according to human passions and not to the will of God. So, when Peter encourages them in their suffering to fight to respond like Jesus, he is at the same time encouraging them to fight to flee the human passions. In the midst of your suffering, how have you responded according to what you want, according to human passions? Were you in a similar position to Peter's first readers? Was it easier to give up and to give in rather than to endure the rejection and reviling of those around you? Young people, when you live for Christ, your peers, your classmates, they might look at you as if you are totally strange. You are out of date. They might laugh. They might dismiss you. But going along with them and compromising in terms of drinking and drugs and sex and swearing and judging and not giving a rip about anyone else, that is a response that you will regret. That isn't God's best for you. That is not God's will. Peter says, arm yourselves with Jesus. And I know it's a really overused phrase. WWJD, what would Jesus do? How would Jesus respond? How would Jesus react? Not so young people. How are you in the face of suffering tempted to respond according to human passions? Are you tempted to lash out, to ignore, to blame, to neglect, to despair, to worry, to get bitter, to justify, to throw yourself a pity party? Well, Peter says the same thing to you. Arm yourselves with the mind of Jesus. And look at how Peter goes on to attack the temptation of human passions. We see from the progression of these verses, his attack involves a past, a present, and a future perspective. It is a three-pronged attack. The past. Peter tells them in verse 3, you spent long enough living like that. And what good did it do you? You spent long enough dishonoring God. In the present, Peter reminds them in verse 4, don't be surprised at this present time that those without Christ attack you. That's what they always do. And in the future, remember. Peter says in verse 5, remember, a day is coming when all people will stand before God and give an account. Human passions will one day be judged according to divine justice. You see, family, friends, church members, as we respond to our suffering, we need this perspective when we are tempted to respond according to what we want or what we feel, and not according to what God wants or God's will. A past, present, and future perspective on our sinful responses should convince us that such a choice is always the wrong choice. So Peter calls them to fight to respond like Jesus. He encourages them to fight in order to flee these human passions. But what about verse 6? Peter writes, for this is why the gospel was preached, even to those who are dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the Spirit the way God does. Sounds kind of like an afterthought. Is this statement still connected to the theme of suffering? Well, I believe it is. And I believe the connection hinges on the right identification of the dead that is mentioned in this verse. And what do we know from this verse? Notice that those who are dead had the gospel preached to them, and because of it, they will live in the Spirit. I don't think that Peter is saying that the gospel is preached to them when they are dead, as if there is some kind of evangelism going on in the afterlife. You see, that would kind of strip Peter of the force of his teaching here. What he is teaching, don't compromise. God's judgment is coming. It would sound more like this then. Don't worry. You'll have a second chance to respond to the gospel after you die. No. I think Peter is talking about how the gospel was preached to those who are now dead. It was preached to them before they died. You see, these Christians, these Christ followers, were troubled by the deaths of some of their fellow believers. Some of them wrongly assumed that death would keep the deceased from partaking in Jesus' return and ultimate victory. Remember, they were first generation Christ followers, and they so looked forward to his return that they were afraid when some of them passed away, they would not be there for Christ's return, and they would not make it. Remember how the Apostle Paul addressed this issue in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. He says, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep." Peter is reminding them here that even though death is a manifestation of God's judgment against sin, even though they are judged in the flesh the way people are, the gospel brings us hope. Because of what Jesus did on the cross, because of his resurrection, we can hope in the face of death. Remember what Peter said about Jesus in chapter 3, verse 18? "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit." Because he was made alive with a new spiritual body, we too can have that hope. When a follower of Jesus dies, we should not mourn like those without hope. We will mourn, but we should also rejoice. So what does this have to do with suffering, you might ask? Well, in the face of suffering, not only are we tempted to respond according to our own wisdom and desires, but we are often motivated to do so by fear. Fear of loss, fear of pain, fear of death. These followers of Christ to whom Peter is writing in this letter may have been tempted to compromise because they feared their persecutors. They feared what their persecutors might do to them. They may have even feared that they would be killed. And if so, they would miss out on Jesus' final victory. When you're suffering, you must fight to have hope. We are so often driven to compromise because we are afraid of what we might lose or how we might suffer even more. The woman who is suffering in her marriage responds with anger toward her husband because she ultimately fears that she will be abandoned and that no one will love her. The boy suffering because of a bully's abuse responds with insults because he fears humiliation or even physical injury. The husband suffering because of financial failure responds with despair and withdrawal because he fears that he is a failure and that things will only get worse. The girl, suffering because of parents' death, responds with blame because she fears a world in which she is not in control. Fear. When we suffer, we need to fight to respond like Jesus, which means we need to fight to flee human passions, doing what we want. And very often, that means fighting to have hope in the face of fear. Now remember back in verses 1 and 2, "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God." This morning, I hope that you have heard from God, that he has spoken to you through his words. He has instructed us and encouraged us in regard to our sufferings. And because of this incredible truth, and in light of these incredible truths, we have to ask, from this point on out, once you leave this place, what will you do with the rest of your time? the rest of your time. It is out there in front of you. I don't know how many more hours or days or weeks or months or years God will give you or me. But however long we have, what will we do with the rest of our time? It reminds me of a conversation that Frodo the Hobbit has with Gandalf, the wizard, in the very first Lord of the Rings movie called The Fellowship of the Ring. And Frodo, with a heavy heart, with a bunch of troubling, out of his suffering and stuff, he says, I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened. And Gandalf, the wise wizard, responds, so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. And I have a brief video. I want you to be able to watch it. So instead of just hearing my words, you get to see and to feel kind of what's going on.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There are other forces at work in this world, Frodo, besides the will of evil. Bilbo was meant to find the ring, in which case you also were meant to have it. And that is an encouraging thought.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All you have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to you.
Have to do is decide what to do with the time that is given us. What will you do with the rest of your time? Is it your desire to live for the will of God? Do you want above and before anything else to live a life that pleases God? Even when you are in the grip of suffering, even when it is not easy to do God's will, if you are not willing to suffer for Christ and or suffer like Christ, then you are not ready to live for the will of God. So what will it take for us to fight through our suffering? Remember, Peter says, arm yourselves with the perspective of Jesus. Listen to how Mark describes the perspective of Jesus in the midst of his sufferings. Only hours before his horrible death on a Roman cross. Mark 14:35 reads, going a little farther, he fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour, Jesus knew the hour of his death, might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, Daddy, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me. Yet, not what I will, but what you will. Do you see the fight here? The battle that is taking place? But Jesus surrenders himself to the will of God, doesn't he? And because he did, and because he suffered for us, he can redeem even our sufferings. It is the cross that makes possible a new heart that is bent on doing God's will. It is the gospel, the good news of what Jesus did, that allows us to follow Jesus' example, to have the mind of Christ, to reject our sinful responses, and to have hope, no matter what the circumstances are. You see, suffering is inevitable. But how you respond and what you choose to do is up to you. Suffering is a part of the program. God knows what is on your top 10 list. He knows what you're going through this morning. But He wants to redeem your suffering. Will the rest of your time on this world be about the will of God or about what you want? Only faith in Jesus can free us to fight through our sufferings so that God is honored, even in the worst of times. And just before the worship team comes up here, we have a song that I'd like you to listen to. It's by Mark Schultz. I think the words are there, Colin, so you can read along with them. And the question is, Jesus surrendered His all. Are you willing to surrender yours in the rest of the time that you have here in this life?
Left. Will you live it all with no regret? Will they say that you love to your final breath? Or what will you do with the time that's left? Oh, Jesus, and I look back. What will you do with the time that's past? Oh, they say that you love to your family.